Awesome.
Question for you guys. Since the 80s, 90s, and the early 2000s, youth have been led to believe that the only way to success is post-high school is via college. Yet today, this is not so much the case anymore. My question to you is, why? On this week's show, we're going to dive right into this and perhaps determine what we would do if we were parents with kids trending on that choice. We're also going to talk about some of the history of my past as an educator, some of the stories that I had that basically turned me into the teacher I was when I started out in New York City public schools. And I got a good one for you. My name is Joe Clossy, and thanks for listening to the Traveling Principal podcast, a show designed to make you start your car after school and put it in drive, then snap out of that trance when you hit your driveway. Of course, paying attention all the while you go with your hands at 10 and 2, but you get me. Okay, so here's the scoop. A Gallup poll from July 2023 highlighted a significant decline in Americans' confidence in higher education, with only 36% of respondents expressing a great deal or quite a lot of confidence. This is down 48% in 2018 and 57% in 2015, so it's down quite a bit, right? Now, polls are just polls. Just that. I can go either way about them. They present a snapshot of notions on trends, and this one doesn't look super positive for post-secondary traditional institutions such as colleges, universities, and private secondary schools. Let's take a look at some possible reasons for this decline, because in almost 10 years, the confidence in thinking that the college or university you are sending your child to is going to lead them to successes in their lives, this is down from 57%, meaning that more than every other person at that time thought that this route was a solid choice for post-high school time spent. Now it's only 36%, which is significantly lower. Now it almost sounds like a risk, and here's why. For information in colleges and universities is not new. You will have someone highly educated tell you what you can find online, then explain to you what you are being told, which is also readily available online. But I guess this is besides the point. I mean, have you recently spoken to anyone that attends a large comprehensive college or university? You go into a giant lecture hall still and listen. You rarely interact. You rarely get deserved attention. You almost never get varied instructional strategies presented to you. And by this, I mean you rarely get anything but a lecture. Did you ever think that if only 36% of the polled individuals have the confidence that colleges and universities are the right path post high school, that the other 64% know that they don't learn when being talked to? I mean, it just doesn't sound like you get your money's worth when you're paying that college bill. I have to say that. Heck, I've been flat out refusing to go back for the EdD because I don't want to pay a ton of money to be told what I already know. I certainly don't want a lecture. I want to look at what's going on right now and collaborate to learn how to help. I don't want to go back in time in my learning only to try to push this off as, I guess, contemporary. Also, colleges and universities are a business. So, in order to get a degree in computer science, you need to take 2 years of courses that have nothing to do with computer science. This is no new news to most of us, but before you declare any major, you need to take the courses that mean nothing to you. By the way, those general education courses, which is what they're called, are also taught to us in the most generic way possible, making it all the harder to gain interest or endure the information. To be 100% transparent, I did walk right out of a business class in college because the teacher stunk. He didn't seem to prepare for the course, was literally only reading slide by slide, and we were writing while he was reading what we read, right? I mean, he was reading off the slide, we were reading off the slide, we were copying it down, he was talking to us while we were copying what was written on the slide. I mean, why didn't he just send us the slide? I didn't even have to go. I was paying for my college. So I didn't feel I was getting my money's worth at all, and I left. I dropped that class and took something else that I needed in order to pay more for tuition. I mean, here's an idea. What if colleges and universities only made you take the courses you need in order to gain eligibility to work in a specific career? Making them almost valuable again. Making the information relevant. But for some reason, they don't. Some smaller private online programs do, and I got nothing but like for them. I don't say love, I say like. Not all lead to anything real, and their own certificate of completion may not be valuable to you at all, but that's what's going back to the notion that the diploma means everything, right? Not what you learned, it's where you learned it from. And so that's always kind of a weird discrepancy, right? Some of these programs, they have their own certificate of completion, and it is not of a value to the rest because it doesn't carry a name, a trusted name. Although, how trusted, right? Let me tell you this example. I hired someone once from Cornell, and that was the last time I valued the education system at that school. Now, I went to Cortland, where we would go to Cornell to pick up the females in the library. I always thought it prestigious. Now, I know that if you can afford that school, and most private schools for that matter as well, you get in. I will say, save some of your real schools that value academic integrity and yet still charge $77,000 a year to go there, do you get your money's worth? And that remains to be seen because depending on the career, you very well may. Doctors attending a school like UCLA will most certainly have an advantage over those from the University of Buffalo when establishing a practice somewhere. But an educator, not so much. You'll have a higher school bill, but you can most likely get the same job. While on this subject matter and while doing some research, I found that the U.S. Department of Education released a report in 2024, January, that shows they are also aware of this trend. And here's what they're doing about it, and here's how I know. A redesign of the FAFSA form, right? I always struggle with that one, which is the free application for federal student aid, FAFSA. They're going to make filing in and completing this process so much easier on the state level. This will create more opportunities for student aid, considering an additional $1.8 billion in aid for students and a newly reorganized design of student aid calculations were also implemented that even accounted for inflation, which is wild, right? What does this mean? The government is making the additional funding they allotted for students more readily available for students and easier to get. So the state comes in to bail you out, colleges. Wow. When banks need that bailout, it means they weren't run correctly, or a major discrepancy in something somewhere is that reason. The major discrepancy here is colleges and universities are not preparing students for careers. They're trying to prolong the notion of preparation, and it's not meaning we need more degrees and more schooling because the undergraduate programs are nothing more than extra high school years minus the differentiation of the delivery of instruction. There's a haymaker for you, college. Should I say it again? I mean, come on. You want to know why we are down 20% in the confidence of those schools? Try something new. At least we don't have to pay for the first 12 years. If you ask me, I would focus on determining how my kids learn so they can figure out for themselves what they love in this world. Then we can create a path to immerse them in it. I guess if that means college, okay. If that means career-oriented programs, okay. If that means a training program, a certification program, a study abroad program, or a career, that's what it means, and I'm okay with it. I'm on the 64% side of this poll. As I've been to three schools myself, I've studied abroad as well, and I have worked with hundreds of institutions since. The only way I'd send my kid, I guess right now, would be this California way. The first 2 years are free. What happens after that is the child's decision at the age of 21. I mean, if I didn't have to pay for the gen ed courses, I mean, it's high school year 13 and 14. Stoked. But free sounds great. So, okay. So I've got some recent emails from two educators that I really look up to. They heard me speak at a Thriving Educator Summit recently and sent me a cool question that I wanted to share online my answer for. And here's what they submitted. Hey, Joe, I have heard you say you spent the first 14 years of your career in New York City public schools, and I'd love to hear a little about that experience. Please share something that stood out in your mind while there and still does today. So, talk about your all-time transition in a script, right? As you may or may not know, I taught in the Bronx in the late 90s and early 2000s, until I went into administration there as well. The first school I taught at and was listed on the New York City's Dirty Dozen school list because of the most incidents reported annually was so wild. It was five floors and almost 5,000 kids and an 80-yard football field in the back. It was awesome. We were the forever underdog, surrounded by projects off Pelham Parkway, and old Christopher Columbus building stood on 925 Astor Avenue. I loved it there. I was drawn to that chaos. I was challenged daily on how to work with it, work through it, and find successes. From scanning students every morning, making the entryway more like that of a prison than a school, to massive daily fights for absolutely no reason at all, that place was bananas. So to address the question, what still stands out to me was on my first day when I gave a diagnostic to a class because I told them that I didn't think they could read. So I wanted to prove to everyone that I was wrong. And this would allow me to work with the students in a class and teach them because I would know where their current levels are. I was their third teacher to come in there in 3 months. The other two quit and couldn't take it. This was thrown in my face immediately upon walking into that classroom. When I told them what others were saying about this class in the job interview, they saw it as a challenge and that I was on their side, which I was. I gave out this diagnostic, which was like a, I don't know, 10, 15 question quiz. Some of them were laughing at my choices because I was notorious for giving a choice E, which was super silly and I knew wasn't real, but it made them laugh while testing and it was a Jedi mind trick to get them comfortable while taking assessments. I also had a room full of students on task and one kid had walked by the room outside in the hallway, had the doorway open, and he was looking mega shady. He kept it moving. Like took a quick glance and then kept it moving, and I made my way to the back of the classroom to check on some of the students. I did have the door open because there was a ton of us in there, and it was super hot, and there was no AC. The windows barely opened up any higher than like 6 inches, so nobody could jump out them. All of a sudden, that kid returned, but this time with a fire extinguisher. And he sprayed the whole class, then dropped it and ran. From the back of the room, admittedly, I had an amazing view. What proceeded, though, was ultra chaotic. Kids in the first few seats who got it the worst were screaming that they couldn't see. A few girls were observed to be pissed and almost in tears because their clothes seemed ruined. One kid was super upset because his Jordans were covered. And then one of the boys in the back of the room stood up and quietly walked towards the door, heavy-handedly as well. Everyone quieted down, even though he had like a cone-shaped hat made from the fire extinguisher spray on the side of his head. I asked him to go back to his seat, and he didn't even react, man. He beelined out the door after the kid. And I then ran after him, slipping in the massive piles of weird discharge from the incident, and then realized, as I made it like into the hallway, I have a class of kids that I just can't leave, but I could hear the rumble in the stairway already. I quickly opened the phone box in my room by the door, and there was no phone in it. Only a frayed cord sticking out of the wall remained. I don't want to say it was comical, because it is now, But at that time, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. I went to the teacher next door, who was already out of his room, walking my way, asking what the heck was going on. And I had told him we were sprayed by a fire extinguisher and there's a fight down there in the steps. He could hear it and said, go, I'll watch your room. I later became very good friends with this guy and worked with him for years, which was kind of funny as that was our first way that we met. But jumping downstairs until I hit the bottom floor, I found school safety already intervening. School safety was on every floor. It was a branch of NYPD school resource officers, school safety officers. The sprayer was detained, and so my student was as well. However, the kid, my kid, was being handcuffed because of his aggression. I informed everyone of what was happening. I totally blamed the sprayer. My student repeated that it wasn't his fault and that the other kid had it coming. And when the entire group was focused listening to me and my student tell our side of this story, the other kid managed to slip away free and just laid a haymaker on my student, knocked him clean unconscious right there in front of us all. Then the kid ran out of the room and school safety chased after him. When they caught him, they picked him up only to carry him like over their head. And in my life at this point, I've only seen one other person unconscious. But on that day, I saw two in the first 30 minutes. The kid was so squirmy, he slipped out of their hands, fell back square on the top of his head. I realized that I had a class upstairs still and ran back up there, leaving the newly chaotic scene, and went to the original one. When I came out of the stairway, my principal was standing there and informed me never to leave my class unattended again. I didn't speak with the counselor after that for a health and wellness check-in. I wasn't given an afternoon off. I was warned not to leave my class unattended. A few rolls of paper towels from the restroom were brought in and some PE clothes for the kids who needed a change. And yes, this stands out in my mind still when thinking about teaching in New York City. I'd be happy to share a bunch of these as we roll out new episodes. Just ask and you shall receive. Well, folks, there you have it. Another episode dedicated to trying to bring some clarity to what's happening in education today. I hope my story sticks with you as well, because when I was asked why I didn't call for help and showed the principal the phone box with the cord in it, he said, just put in a request to get another one. What are you waiting for? And I responded with, this is only my first day here. This is Joe Colossi signing off, saying thanks for listening. And if you ever find yourself in a chaotic situation that billows into the hallway and leads to further violence, remember, make sure your phone is there and works before you go use it. That always helps. And for crying out loud, don't leave your class unattended ever. Thanks for listening, you guys.